10. Williamsburg, Virginia, November 11, 1776, midnight. Thomas Jefferson is anxious. Almost 4,000 miles from London, the author of the Declaration of Independence lies in bed with his wife Martha. Outside the many-paned bedroom windows of this borrowed home, the moon is dark. Almost 5 years into their marriage, Thomas and Martha's passion for each other still burns hot. The grief surrounding her midsummer miscarriage still lingers, but the lovers have wasted no time in conceiving a new child who, if born without incident, will be a sibling to their 4-year-old Patsy. Martha Jefferson is due to deliver sometime in May. She is a small woman, little more than 5 feet tall, a lithe brunette with hazel eyes whose petite features stand in sharp contrast to Jefferson's towering stature. Once again, she has begun to add the prodigious curves of her typical pregnancy, not knowing that the added weight and her chronic diabetes play a part in the silent killing of her unborn children. Footnote: Thomas and Martha Jefferson had no idea she was afflicted with diabetes. In fact, it was only in the 20th century that historians began to believe, based upon her recorded symptoms, that Mrs. Jefferson was diabetic. Children born to diabetic mothers often come into the world with low blood sugar or jaundice, or they are stillborn. The use of insulin as a successful treatment for diabetes was begun in the early 1900s. It's worth noting, however, that some scholars believe malaria may have been the cause of Martha's miscarriages. End footnote. The other matter dominating Jefferson's thoughts is the struggle for independence. Abandoning the Congress to be with Martha was just the first step in the Virginian removing himself from the grind of national politics. Jefferson and his 15-year-old mulatto slave, Bob, rode away from Philadelphia the first week of September, making the 268-mile journey home to Martha at Monticello. The mountaintop home is their refuge, a simple two-story dwelling offering endless views of the thick forests and peaks of the American frontier. Jefferson's journey was not easy. The roads were unpaved and rutted. There were many rivers and streams to ford, and there were few places to stop for proper lodging. Indeed, after the first 50 miles of travel, Jefferson entered the wilderness and thick primeval forests. But the journey was uneventful, and on September 9, 1776, at roughly the same moment Congress declared that the 13 colonies would henceforth be named the United States of America, he stepped through the front door of Monticello. Within weeks, however, Jefferson realized he could not separate himself from the cause of independence. So he and the pregnant Martha boarded a carriage and traveled east all the way across Virginia to the capital city of Williamsburg, where Jefferson assumed his seat in the state's House of Delegates. Footnote: formed in 1619, this body was the first elected legislature in America. Originally known as the House of Burgesses, it was dubbed the House of Delegates in 1776. Its last act as the House of Burgesses was to vote in favor of independence. End footnote. That is why the Jeffersons have now taken up residence at the home of longtime friend George Wythe. But once more, Jefferson is confronted with a dilemma. Earlier this fall, the president of the Second Continental Congress, John Hancock, requested that the Virginian return to the Revolution, imploring him to sail immediately for France with Benjamin Franklin. Their goal would be to convince French King Louis XVI to assist in the American war effort. Franklin accepted the assignment immediately. Indeed, he is now somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic, 2 weeks into his voyage to France. Not so Jefferson. On October 11th, after 3 agonizing days of indecision, he again chose Martha over his nation. He would not join Franklin in Paris. The introverted Virginian could not imagine subjecting a pregnant Martha to the rigors of an Atlantic crossing during this storm-tossed time of year. Nor could he envision making the journey without her. Jefferson's decision angered his fellow Virginian Richard Henry Lee, who chastised him for putting his personal life before his country. Lee compared Jefferson's marital commitment to that of being a British slave, should the war be lost. "I heard with much regret that you had declined both the voyage and your seat in Congress," Lee wrote. "No man feels more deeply than I do the love of and the loss of private enjoyments. But let attention to these be universal, and we are gone, beyond redemption lost in the deep perdition of slavery." Jefferson never responded. But while the Virginian may seem indifferent to the cause of independence, making no effort to join a militia or otherwise take up arms for liberty, his ongoing intellectual attacks on King George have broadened the scope of the American rebellion. "I saw, too," Jefferson will write years from now, justifying why he turned down the appointment to France, "that the laboring oar was really at home, where much was to be done." Jefferson is a popular figure in the Assembly, promoting his own idealistic views on how best to expand liberty. He has begun by altering Virginia's laws to reflect the new reality of its being a state, not a colony. Freedom of religion has been expanded. The Church of England has been disestablished as the one true theology, and the right of primogeniture, a feudal tradition that gives firstborn sons power of inheritance to the exclusion of others, is soon to be abolished. In this way, Thomas Jefferson fights the British monarchy by destroying its traditions. The battle Jefferson wages is one for lasting change. He wants few remnants of the English imposition. It is a cause that does not yet bear this title, but that will soon be remembered as a revolutionary war. Footnote: among the first known uses of the word revolution to describe political change was the Glorious Revolution in 1689, which saw England's King James II removed from the throne. End footnote. Jefferson believes that all of Virginia's existing laws must be rewritten or completely thrown out. His mind works frantically, as does his writing hand. Jefferson puts his prodigious thoughts on paper each day, organizing the various issues facing Virginia and America into a wide-ranging collection of essays, notes on religion, notes on heresy, and just this morning, notes concerning the bill for the removal of the seat of government in Virginia. It seems there is nothing the fervent mind of Thomas Jefferson cannot imagine. But as he sleeps next to his beloved wife on this dark autumn night, not knowing if the baby growing inside her womb will live to see its first birthday, Jefferson also believes that he might not live to see his unborn child's first year. Footnote: Thomas Jefferson's first and only male child will come into the world on May 28, 1777. He was never given a name, though some sources claim the boy was called either Peter, after Jefferson's father, or Thomas. The baby boy lived just 17 days, most likely dying of fevers associated with influenza and diarrhea. End footnote. As a signer of the Declaration of Independence and known member of the Second Continental Congress, Thomas Jefferson is a marked man. Already the British Navy has attacked the coasts of South Carolina and Virginia. The ships have since sailed north to support General Howe in his fight against George Washington at New York, but it is inevitable that they will soon return to Virginia and bring the fight to Jefferson's front door. When that day comes, and it will, Thomas Jefferson will be forced to run for his life. Revolution comes with a cost. But there is no turning back. In the morning, Jefferson will rise at dawn as always. He will soak his feet in cold water and record the temperature outside his window, just as he does every day. He will dress, eat a simple breakfast of coffee, cold ham, and bread, and say goodbye to Martha before making his way across the palace green to the state legislature. In this routine, the introverted Jefferson manages his emotions. Ironically, taking the assignment in Paris would have guaranteed his personal safety. he would have had nothing to fear in the court of Louis XVI. But Jefferson has no stomach for the puffery and debauchery of royal living. He prefers the simple things in life, love, routine, and the intellectual work of defining true liberty. For now, his life is calm, but not for much longer.